Today is Free For All Live right here at Grumblings Media. You can catch us on Rumble, YouTube, X, and Facebook Live. You can also just go to our website, grumblingsmedia.com, and check out all our great offerings, including the previously mentioned Liberty Lens. We also have some great conservative stuff and just plain sports talk. And folks, let me remind you, we are live, so whatever platform you're on, just go into the comment section, the live comment section, and drop your questions for us, whether it's for me, Big John, my co-host, Hody Johns, or our guest for tonight, Jake Porter. Welcome, fellas, to the show tonight. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. It's okay. Good to see you too, John.
It is. Okay, look, I'll be smart. Next time I will either point or call on one of you. I keep forgetting. Until we have that nice rapport set up, I'm going to have to be a little bit more of a director. But let me ask you this, fellas, before we get into the nerdy libertarian stuff, who's into football? Who enjoyed the Super Bowl the other day? Hody.
I loved it. Here's the thing. I'm a Broncos fan. Right. I don't feel the rivalry that other people feel. And people hate that about me being a fan. I genuinely don't dislike the Chiefs. I genuinely don't dislike the Raiders or the Chargers. I feel for their fan base as much as mine when they go through a long period of destitution. And I truly mean that. That being said, I do like people taking turns at the top. Right. Obviously, the Eagles have had a very recent Super Bowl, so it's not like their fans are suffering or anything like that. But this is, aside from most of the offensive line, this is generally a pretty new group of guys from that 2018 team. And it was just cool to see somebody else win for once. I'm excited. You know, my Broncos took a 10-year break. And I think now I'm ready to see us back on top again next year.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, and they've got a good team. Jake, are you a football fan?
So I actually didn't watch it this year.
Oh, okay.
Born in Missouri, so I should.
Okay. So there were no fans there. I have to say it was an example. Maybe Jake can do some digging for us. He is sort of like a digital bloodhound. So I want to make sure maybe he could look into, is this what happens when the refs aren't paid off for the Chiefs? They actually lose a competitive game? I don't know. We're libertarians. Conspiracy theories abound. All right. Getting on to somewhat more serious stuff, everyone. And like I said, please, if you have any questions during the course of the show, feel free to drop them in the comment section. We'll pop them up on screen and address them like we always do. Okay. Hody. Just want to start out by saying, like, this week, everyone seems to be focusing a little more on the actions of President Trump, his first 100 days in office. We're still in the middle of that, of his second term, his second 100 days, so to speak. And look, there's been a lot of chatter, specifically around Doge, specifically around his trade initiatives, his trade policies, tariffs, trade wars, and even perhaps what some are terming whether you consider it sort of like American imperialism or American exceptionalism, take your pick. He's also talking about, in essence, annexing foreign nations. So, Hody, let's start out with Doge. How are you feeling about what's been going on with Doge? Generally speaking, do you feel positive about it, negative? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Negative. I just today we got to see more of the budgetary desires from Donald Trump. He flexed his muscles over Johnson. And we thought initially before he took over that this was because he wanted a smaller budget, right? And that he felt Johnson was selling out too much. Turns out the very next day we all wake up and he actually was pushing for a larger budget. We now see the GOP budget today and it's even higher, like $8 trillion higher over the next 4 years than what we thought it was going to be in additional spending. So here's the problem. Even as Justin Amash pointed out, even if Doge finds 2 trillion things to cut over 10 years, first of all, Elon Musk has already backed off of that promise, says they're not going to make that. But even if he were to, we'd still be spending more than ever before. And now here's my real issue with it from a libertarian standpoint. They've stamped Ron Paul all over this thing, even if all they do is tease that he's going to be part of it or whisper that he might, you know, look into the Fed part of it sometimes if we ask really nicely, whatever. listen, libertarians, we are as guilty of idolatry as anybody else. I like Ron Paul. I totally get it. A lot of my best friends came to the movement from Ron Paul. I loved when he was shoving it in the face of the duopoly. I get the love for Ron Paul, so I don't want to come off as anything negative there. But we will take the bait when it's on the hook, unfortunately. And this is bait. They want us to throw a libertarian stamp of approval on the biggest spending package that we've ever seen. And
your concern right now is that you, and if I'm not summarizing this correctly, please let me know. But basically we've got Doge that's announcing that they found all these things they cut, right, guys? So they're saying, hey, we found $50 million that's being wasted on a condom somewhere, Gaza, Mozambique, we're not sure, but we know it's $50 million going to rubbers, essentially, right? Yeah. Then, we see, cutting USAID, USAID, that department, which, look, I think it's fair enough. Going back to the 80s, at least when I first became a little politically aware, you had Jack Kemp running around talking about these things. You had Newt Gingrich running around talking about these things. Hell, even a lot of Democrats back then, you could pick out some blue dog Democrats like Sam Nunn, who was saying like the famous $10,000 toilet seat that the Air Force had been buying, right? So it's not that waste in government is anything new. Hell, we all remember the guy on the late night infomercials with his, what was his name, Lesko, who had the thick book and he wore the suit with the question marks. Like, there's more money for you than you could ever imagine from the federal government, right? Like, we know there's waste, right? We know there's waste. So Elon, I think, from a PR perspective, is doing a great job. He's like, every day, here's something else I found that's nonsense that we can get rid of. 2 points. A lot of these are not actual cuts yet. A lot of these are going to be challenged in court because it's one thing to identify stuff. It's one thing to audit stuff. But if it's been appropriated by Congress, it's not within the purview of an executive order to get rid of it. Now, there is some trickery you could play, right? Like, for example, if it's something in the executive branch, yeah, Trump can then sort of redirect the ebb and flow of those funds and direct how they're going to be used. He could choke off some executive level programs. But stuff that's been approved by Congress and allocated by Congress, he can't just snap his fingers. Any more than Obama could have, right? Like, Obama couldn't fabricate money out of nothing, and right. Trump equally can't make it go away. So, Jake, when you see someone like Musk, who, even if I give him every benefit of the doubt, and I have absolutely no reason to doubt his sincerity right now, that he's looking to eliminate waste, are people in general and libertarians specifically perhaps a little over-enthusiastic about what he's actually accomplished? And given the caveat, it's only been a month, all right? Like, let's not pretend like this has been a four-year effort to date. Tell me what you think about that.
Well, I think it's great to get people talking about this, getting people to talk about cutting government, getting people to talk about that. But as you pointed out, people have been doing it a long time. We used to have Congressman Jim Traficant that used to give his speeches that would certainly rile people up. It's been going on here. Ross Perot has. It's good to have happen again. That said, I see a lot of excuses being made for Donald Trump in other areas because of this program. It's not going to cut a whole lot of government. They'll cut a little bit here, a little bit there, and that's important to do. But we can't lose sight of the real problems that we have, the unfunded liabilities that the nation has, the loaded military budget. And those things are going to get ignored, I'm afraid. And also the talk about Gaza and everything else, conservatives and libertarians will ignore these issues because they think that something is being done to cut the cut government.
Right. It is a little disheartening because to your guys' point, I see a lot of stuff that's being targeted, but and again, maybe we should be grateful that if there's any incremental, I'm not a radical. I'm the first to admit it. I'm not an anarchist. I'm not an ANCAP. If you asked me, I said this yesterday with Mike Dermott. I've been saying it most of my adult life. If we just kept spending flat at a nominal rate, the American economy, the GDP, will be enough to eliminate the deficit in a reasonable amount of time, say a decade, 10 to 12 years. And that means cutting nothing. It just means don't add to it. Don't spend a penny more. Then when you're balanced, now you could start eliminating stuff like, okay, you want Social Security? maybe we give up the fine arts program or something like that. And actually force government to make real choices at that point without anybody getting dinged. Having said that, if you got rid of all foreign aid, right? Let's say we're all on the MAGA bandwagon. We're all on the libertarian. We hate Gaza. We hate Ukraine. We hate Israel. We don't want to send America first, all that fine stuff. All that added up equates to about 1.5% of the federal budget. So if you got rid of all this stuff that people have been clamoring for, that's 1.5% of the budget. It's not even enough to make a dent on the interest of our debt, right? So we have to keep things in mind. Having said that, do you think there's political will? Political will, not the Elon Musk sort of nerd, here's where the numbers take me, but the actual political will to say, we need to make cuts to Social Security. We need to make cuts to defense spending. We need to make cuts to Medicare, because those things are what make up 60-70% of the budget, not the 1%, 1.5% that goes to foreign aid and like the handful of social programs that have been pointed out. I don't know. Either one of you guys, Jahodi or Jake, what do you think?
Yeah, probably not going to be will, because we see it already. And I think the way the administration is doing this. Now, Donald Trump's a populist, right? We can already see him reversing course on some of the tariffs that he was going to do. As soon as they spiked prices, there was blowback. They used to be the best thing in the world. Now they were just a negotiating tool, whatever, right? Like, and in that sense, it's good, right? That we can, if we are loud enough against what he's doing, that he will stop. You know, so on that end, it's very good. However, listen, I already have two friends. They have disabled children. They've already received AI-generated letters that they've received their last check from the U.S. Department of Education for their kids' special educational needs, right? These are the type of things that are being cut. Now, we as libertarians, we might be a little heartless and say, like, yeah, you know, I'm really sorry, but, like, on average, they take $2,000 per household. I'd rather you keep that money and not have this evil system that is bureaucratic. Here's the problem. We didn't eliminate the U.S. Department of Education. We got rid of my friend's disability checks. But what did we do instead? We consolidated the rest of the department, put it into the hands of other people. The bureaucrats are still getting their money. The 1% that they cut, Big John, was like people who are really hurting, people who are really downtrodden. We noticed this with right. USAID, how part of this was farmers, right? We saw the farmers on the TikTok last week. Talking about how they regretted their vote for Trump because they just got their AI generated notes that they've received their last paychecks right. as well. Now, of course, those Rockefeller farms, those Turner farms, they're getting a little bit of a pay bump, right? We got a new $8 trillion increased spending. Those guys are getting a pay bump. Where are we cutting it from? We're cutting it from the little guys. Essentially, if right. this is Robin Hood, we're taking the money that we used to give Friar Tuck and we're hiring a second sheriff of Nottingham. This is really, really poor way to grow government. It's really not popular. And so I think, unfortunately, the good cuts are going to be done so poorly that we won't have the stomach when we actually need to do the great cuts, like what you're talking about.
Yeah. And Jake, to Hody's point, libertarians, the one thing that we've always been accused of is being heartless, right? Like, especially from the left, right? The left will always throw that in a libertarian's face. Oh, so you're for taking away a special needs kid's support safety net. You're for leaving people with cancer to die on the street. Like, you guys don't care about all that. As a libertarian, when you're confronted with that, and simultaneously there's a lot of our tribe cheering on what Trump is doing, whether it's the steep cuts and the tariffs and all that, how do you respond to someone who comes and says that to you? How do you respond to Hody's friends who are in this position?
Well, it's a valid point, you know, and I've always kind of, when I ran for governor of Iowa, my thing was always, we're going to go after the corporate welfare first before we touch anything else. The governor of Iowa, before I ran, had privatized Medicaid. Well, actually, when I ran, privatized Medicaid, they cut down a whole bunch of mental health facilities. And the idea was, well, the market will work. The market will work better. The market will, in these circumstances, particularly the mental health facilities, work better. It won't work better when overnight you cut these things off and don't give them the market or the nonprofits the chance to ever do anything. And furthermore, we found out they weren't allowed through certificate of need laws. So we created this bureaucratic process that the market couldn't work. And so you go in there and just start slashing stuff without addressing those issues, you're going to have major problems. And you are going to have people that are going to get harmed by it.
Right. And there is going, look, there's going to be any sort of major change like this is going to involve a transitional phase, right? And one of the things I remember a couple of years ago when I was discussing this with Larry Sharp when he was running for governor of New York was the first step is I'm not taking away people's school allocations. I'm not taking away special needs budgets. What I'm doing is I'm going to at least take them away from the bureaucrats and achieve efficiencies by giving it back to the taxpayers, to the parents in this case. And in the meantime, I'm going to find ways to privatize that. Right. And if you listen to Larry, one of the reasons I became attracted to his campaign initially was we're going to get rid of tolls. How are we going to pay for the roads? I'm going to sell the naming rights to the Lincoln Tunnel. I'm going to sell the naming rights to the Triborough Bridge, to the George Washington Bridge, just like they do your favorite ballpark, right? Or your favorite football stadium. I'm going to sell naming rights. And I know people who will pay for that. Here's the Google Tunnel taking you from Long Island to New York City, right? So, and I think that type of model would work, but this, you're right. It does come across as heartless when your friend's kids, my kid who's a special needs kid, all of a sudden his support system is taken away and parents are left to fend for themselves while their tax rates have not come down. You're not getting a refund on all the money that's been stolen from you to date. You're still faced with, you know, property taxes and every other tax you could and regulatory scheme you could think of. So I think as libertarians, to Jay, to your point is, yes, our end goal is this Ancapistan where there's no taxes, no government. But in the meantime, can we at least start with what makes sense on a human level? If we're going to eliminate this stuff, let's eliminate it top down. Let's eliminate the corporate welfare, to your point. Let's eliminate the cronyism. Let's eliminate the graft. See, this is where I'm 100% with Elon, always have been. It's like, yeah, why are we paying for $50,000 subscriptions? Why are we paying for $100,000 monkey wrenches to service the, you know, the $10,000 toilet seats, right? We there are ways of saving that sort of money and working top down. Before we continue, everyone who's listening out there, if again, this is a live interactive show, please give us your comments, questions, or just feedback. If you're listening to us and you're sick of my voice, you want to hear more of Hody's voice, please let us know. Put it in the comments. We'll make that happen for you. Also, as later on in the show, we'll have Jake with his to tell us a little bit more about these silly little games of intrigue and graft that are taking place within the Libertarian Party. So you want to stay tuned for that. All right. So final $64,000 question on the issue of Doge and these assorted savings programs. Two questions for both of you. Let's start with Jake. Does Elon ride it out to the end with Trump? Is he going to stick around? And B, how long do you feel that Doge as a, quote, agency? It's not an agency. It's created by executive order, right? So how long is Doge going to stick around and be an effective mechanism for the Trump administration, would you say?
Yeah, so the first question, how long does he stick around? Not very much longer if his son doesn't stop showing up and telling Trump to shut his mouth. I don't think that's going to work out very well.
Right.
So I think
it'll
last a little while. Trump may not like him getting all the attention and light, and that could cause some problems, obviously. It is a very good marketing thing to talk about. If anything good comes from this, it will probably be that it may cut a little bit from the federal budget, but it might get people more at the local level talking about this or the state level where you actually can make some significant cuts there that will impact property taxes, will impact, sales tax and income tax. That's possible. So how long it stays, I don't know that we'll be talking about it a year from now. Maybe we will, but I doubt that.
Yep.
I think Hody, at some point people get tired of it.
Right. Hody, what do you think?
You know, it'll go as far as we have the will to take it. I don't know if will's the right word. We have to be smart. We are aware that Trump is kind of using some of these organizations and branding to, look like a small. The Republicans have done this forever, right? We grow government, but we pretend we're small. When I was a Republican strategist, it was literally in our strategy guide to talk about these libertarian points, virtue signal, make deals if you can, pretend to work with them, cover yourself in libertarian coding, and then the instant you're elected, just forget all about it, right? The libertarians are dumb enough to be okay with rhetoric. So what we need to do as libertarians is have the stamina to say, listen, I stand by the rhetoric. We do need to shut down government. I stand by what Elon Musk says he wants to do when he talks about this. I stand by Donald Trump when he says he wants to audit government and get by the wasteful things. But, you know, it's a trick. Can we get the bait off the hook without getting caught on the hook, right? It's always bait on the hook whenever they offer us something like Ross Ulbricht. And so when we look at that, we have to know that it's bait and it's on a hook. Now, are we good enough and talented enough to take that bait off the hook, say, thank you for freeing Ross Ulbricht, how dare you commit ethnic cleansing in the Middle East, right? Like, are we able to do that? And most people don't, right? Like, these are just, that's human nature to kind of idealize somebody, to give somebody some props that they don't deserve if they show us a little bit of love, you know? And so it's up to us to kind of be very vigilant about it, to be very intelligent and say, okay, I'm glad that these couple of good things happened. Listen, there are so many wasteful programs in government, but do libertarians have the willpower to say, hey, listen, I see that you cut 1%. Cool. A lot of it was from people in need, so that's not really great. But let's say 0.5% of it was from, you know, genuinely wasteful programs. Hey, I also noticed you're going to spend 4 times what we were planning on you spending. So, you know, 400% to 0.5% equals we still come out way in the red here. Do we have the stamina then to criticize Donald Trump and what he does 400 times to every one time that he actually does give us a crumb of something that we want? I don't know. But that's kind of our challenge, right?
Yeah, and to my producer's point, Mr. Producer, I did have it in my notes. I want you to know that. But I appreciate you sending me the message over my headphones here, which is that there's already been over 50 court challenges to a lot of the programs that Elon Musk and Trump say they're going to get rid of. And for those out there that are saying, oh, well, it's all those, you know, they went judge shopping. It's all these lefty activist judges. No, there's actually been a couple of conservative judges, Republican judges, and two that I picked out for two of the biggest things. Judge Carl Nichols, who himself is a Trump appointee, he's the one who blocked the plan to put 2,200 U.S. aid staff on paid leave, right? So he put a kibosh. He says you can't do that. And there was a Bush appointee, a G.W. Bush appointee, who halted Trump's executive order that aimed to restrict birthright citizenship, right? Because remember, part of this thing was, let's get rid of birthright citizenship. That means we could deport a whole bunch of people. And that was Judge Joseph LaPlante. So it's not strictly like, oh, these libs are going and they're judge shopping. Yes, that occurs to some extent, but it's not been 100% ruling. All the rulings that have come across have not been 100% from activist judges in the traditional sense. And to that point, we have our comment. William says, there are some conflicts of interest. One judge has a daughter that works for USAID, and that's a clear conflict of interest. Yeah, maybe it is. I don't know. I'm not here to defend any single judge or number of judges, but the point is that a lot of these things will be challenged in court, because, let's face it, you take bold action, you'll have bold pushback. It's just, again, it's the nature of this thing. So before we start praising, and again, I'm with Hody. When Trump does something that's positive, I'm more than happy to give him credit for that. It's just that you got to keep both eyes open because, to your point, on the one hand, let's cut 1% of the budget, but let's raise the debt ceiling, let's increase our debt 4x by the end of my administration. That's not tenable, and that's also traditionally deceptive. Everyone out there, again, that you're watching Free For All right here on Grumblings Media, stay tuned towards the second half of the show. I'm going to ask Jake to tell me a little bit about some stuff that he's in his usual role as an internet bloodhound, a sleuth. We're going to have him talk about some things that he found. But until then, the next topic I want to talk about is Trump's trade policies, his tariffs, his, let's call it, art of the deal tactics, right? Because that's what he's famous for. So I'm sure you guys have been just as disturbed as I have about all the talk about Trump and his imperialistic desires. He wants Greenland. He keeps referring to Canada as our 51st state. He's threatening Panama over ownership of the canal, and invoking some clauses in the treaty that was signed that will allow the U.S. to reclaim the Panama Canal. These are disturbing. And I forgot, he wants to put Trump condos on the Gaza Strip, right? And in his words, get rid of all the people in Gaza Strip and make sure none of them come back, right? So this is disturbing from a libertarian, from a human perspective, it's disturbing. From a libertarian perspective, it's disturbing. So, Jake, why are so many libertarians happy to see Trump make these announcements?
I don't know if they're happy to see him make the announcements or they're just ignoring them. I think it's more likely they're just ignoring them. Oh, that's just Trump being Trump. It doesn't really matter. The concern is that when people start talking like this, that it may not be that he's actually going to do these things, but it opens the door up to that happening in the future. Now, we've already moved the Overton window on these issues. We are now actually openly talking about something. And at some point you could say, oh, that's far off. Well, eventually stuff like that starts to happen. Wasn't that long ago we had the idea of manifest destiny, right? We'll take over the world. It could happen again. That's happened throughout history. And there's nothing that exempts us from doing stuff like that in the future. Just because his plans are far out there and it's Donald Trump saying it doesn't mean someone else might do that. And we've now get accustomed to where we're not even questioning these things. This would have been a huge scandal to have a president talking about just a few years ago.
Right.
Today, we just kind of gloss it over and we talk about whatever's next on the agenda for Trump.
Yeah. Hody. Now, let's say I'm someone who is very apt to give people the benefit of the doubt, and I take people at their face value and their word. How do we know this isn't Trump just talking tough on trade? I mean, let's face it, he's slapping tariffs on everybody until they play fair, because for some reason trade deficits are bad, I guess if you don't understand economics, right? So is this just a negotiating ploy? Like if Canada, if you don't play nice with reciprocal trade agreements, not only are you going to get these 25, 50, 100% tariffs, you're also going to become my 51st state, and all you politicians in Canada, none of you will be above the level of a state senator once I get through with you. Is that what it is? Is it a negotiating ploy? Is it just something that he does to troll the libs? What's your opinion on that?
We can look at his first term. I mean, he had a first term, right? We can see what he did then. Were the tariffs that he employed really great for the economy? Did they bring in all this extra income and we were able to abolish more of the taxes that we wanted to abolish, in order to substitute them with these tariffs? No, right? Like he put a tariff on steel. Steel became ridiculously expensive. It was not good for the average American person. It was great for his steel investors and the people who backed his campaign, sure. But that's, really bad for the American economy overall as a consumer, right? Or even as a producer that wants to pay the lowest cost for the highest quality steel that I can get, right. So we can look at his first term and see how well he does. Listen, Trump didn't write the art of the deal. I mean, everybody who listens to Epic Rap Battles is aware of that, right? Like, this is a guy who hires a ghostwriter. His only contributions to it was striking of the names of some of the people he was supposed to share credit with because he doesn't like them anymore and he burned those bridges. Donald Trump's got a ton of stuff. Like, even if I'm trying to be like maximum positive here, tons of bankrupt businesses, right? He shoots, if I'm going to see him in the best light, he shoots his shot, right? He takes that shot. Maybe it hits 1% of the time. And if it hits, it's a gold mine, right? And if not, it's Trump University. It's a disaster. So do I want to see this guy take his shot like that with America? This is a guy who already said, I'm going to handle the immigration crisis just like I handled the COVID crisis. I'm not going to let rights and courts and everything like that get in my way. We saw what happened during the COVID crisis and how he handled that. He's doing the same for the economic crisis, the immigration crisis, and everything like that. He's not letting everything get in his way. We have history. We are able to see what Donald Trump once from this. So we don't have to take Donald Trump's word. Big John, you said, let's say I'm a guy who just like likes to trust people. Stay right. far away from Donald Trump. But yeah.
Okay.
Like,
yeah. So, but I mean, okay. So we get it. At the end of the day, he's a populist. If those midterms come close and he's losing ground in the House, he's losing ground in the Senate, absolutely, he'll reverse course. We know that about Donald Trump, right? So he's clearly a populist. For better or for worse, he's clearly a populist. But I guess the question I'm asking you is, do you feel that his ultimate goal is, and I understand, and I agree with Jake, you start talking about this stuff openly and normalize it, it'll happen eventually, whether Trump is the one to do it or Vance is the one to do it down the road or whatever, right? The point is that, yeah, we don't want to necessarily see that. But do you think that in his own mind, his goal is, I'm just doing this to scare people into getting me good trade deals? Do you think that that is his ultimate goal, irrespective of whether or not we think it'll be successful? Do you think that is his ultimate goal, or is there something nefarious, not even on Trump's part, but say the shadow government's part? Because let's face it, it's not like there's not a shadow government going on right now either.
I can keep this concise. I don't believe so. The reason I cite the first term is because I can say he wasn't negotiating with anybody on tariffs. The reason for them was to make his backers wealthy, and that was successful. Donald Trump's tariffs have already been successful, right? Like, they are not successful at the grocery store, of course, right? They're not successful for our paychecks, of course. That's not what he cares about, right? Like, what is working well for him is his business partners, his deals, the people who finance his campaign, his investment portfolio. Yep. He's doing fantastic because of this. So I think it's being executed very well by him. I just don't share his goal, I guess.
Right. And Jake, you know, Milton Friedman, I remember this, and it's going to be a quote of a quote, right? I remember seeing Milton Friedman once on a YouTube video of lecturing at the time college kids about tariffs and why tariffs are bad. And he quoted Lord George, who said, tariffs accomplish in peacetime to ourselves what we would do to our enemies during war, that they are devastating to an economy. Right. And just to some, I want you to comment on this, but already since taking office and implementing his tariffs, I did some research on various AIs. This is what I came up with: increased consumer costs. We've already seen those begin to happen. The typical U.S. household is facing a tax increase of more than $1,200 per year due to these tariffs. Stock market volatility. On February 3rd, the stock market experienced a sharp decline in anticipation of new tariffs, reflecting investor concerns about economic impacts. Retaliatory measures in response to the 10% tariffs imposed on February 4th. China retaliated by imposing tariffs on U.S. products, including coal and large vehicles. And China is also restricting exports now to the U.S. Disruption in supply chains, potential job losses. As these costs increase and companies have to maintain their profit margins, they have to cut costs. A lot of times, the easiest way to cut these costs, much like Elon is doing with the government, is letting go of people. Human capital gets lost. And reduced economic growth. Economists project that the new tariffs will lead to weaker GDP growth in 2025 for the United States, Canada, Mexico, and anybody else involved in these tariffs on both sides, because tariffs hurt your own people. Jake, talk to me. I thought we had disproved the fact that tariffs are bad. It was one of the few things that Republicans had accomplished in the 90s. Between Friedman's stumping in popular media, his influence in the Republican administrations, the Reagan administration, we had established tariffs bad. Even Democrats agreed with that. Even the Clintons agreed with that. How did we come around to libertarians now supporting tariffs again? How do we get to this point?
Well, you know, there's always been this protectionist movement, this mercantilist movement that's been around. It's been around in conservatism. You could say, well, George H.W. Bush and Reagan, they were pretty good on this and pretty good on immigration in comparison. But at the same time, there was always Pat Buchanan there. There was always this strain within the Republican Party and always this paleo strain within the Libertarian Party as well, that has this view that, trade deficits are bad and that if another country is willing to shoot them and themselves in the foot, that we should also shoot ourselves in the foot. You know, Donald Trump has been talking since the 80s about how, you know, the Japanese protectionist model was good. But I don't think he ever looked to see what it did to their economy in the mid-90s either. So he's still talking about something that he believes was a good thing in the 80s that turned out to be a disaster in practice. It's not a good idea. And every time that, you know, and this is the same thing, you know, years ago under the Obama administration, every time Chris Dodd would open his mouth, the price of stocks would go down. You know, every time they would say something, the stock market would go down. And that's kind of like this. Every time we threaten the tariff, the stock market goes down. It's not good for investors. It's it creates it could create panic selling. It will not be good for the economy. It's not good for people's pocketbooks. And for the most part, one of the things that's really benefited America is that we have trade among the states, that we don't tariff each other. We don't tax each other unnecessarily.
Right.
If we started to implement that, imagine a disaster. That was one of the brilliance of our founding fathers. And it's something that, for the most part, we have agreed with. But now you've got libertarians that want to go back to a system where we don't have free trade among the states. You have that certain element within the Libertarian Party, that Hoppian philosophy that you can do stuff like this. And it's not libertarians, it's a neoliberal theory.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me because, again, I keep bringing up this example. I've heard Amash bring this up. You know, it's like the first thing an Austrian or a Chicago school guy would tell you. It's like, okay, how's your trade deficit with your local grocery store going? I would challenge any one of us to say, when we go shop, assuming we shop and we don't grow our own food, right? Like, the grocery store will always be giving them more money than they give us, right? Like I keep saying, my local ShopRite hasn't bought advertising space on Free for All, but they take my money every week. I'm deep in the red with my grocery store. Is that a bad thing? If I can eat and I'm happy with my relationship, why am I going to force them, right? So I think the state tariff is a great example, Jake. I think because to be able to say, what if New York had tariffs on California and vice versa? What if New York had tariffs on red states and vice versa? Would we be able to conduct trade even amongst ourselves? For the America First people, would you be able to trade amongst yourself? And the answer is no. I think you're very, very correct in bringing that up. Hody, do you have anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, there's a great quote about where trading goods don't cross borders, soldiers will.
Yes.
We have seen that play about in the real world. One of the things that I lament, and I can get along with Republicans a lot on this one, is what our sanctions did to like Russia, and how terrible it was to really put them in a place where they had to rely on a tyrannical government. You know, Yeah, and Cuba, of course, and that's when I relate to my Democrat friends on, right? They both experienced this kind of, wow, like there was really a lot of suffering there. And they turned to tyranny and dictatorship because they wanted somebody to be that cudgel against the cudgel that was being used, you know? And so we kind of understand why these countries devolved into authoritarian dictatorships the way that they did, because of the economic harms and restrictions placed against them. Whereas if we allow a free trade of goods, even with small, tiny countries, they can become immensely prosperous. And that seconds by not having to defend against them. So the issue with tariffs here is if you want a large government, and that's your goal, is to kind of have a big controlling government, it's really wise to have tariffs, because what you do is then you say, I want my manufacturing inside. And then that protects, in addition to protecting, as I mentioned, Donald Trump's, you know, backers, steel interests, you know, local farms, not local farms, but big federal government funded farms. But in addition to that.
Yeah. Favored political cronies is a nice general way of saying it. Just whoever the favored political group of the moment is, right?
I'll log that away, right? His favorite political cronies. But in addition to that, you also get that nice Keynesian hit of adrenaline where you get to protect your defense contracting cronies as well, who donate tons of money as well, because they know that there are going to be skirmishes. And even if there's not wars, there's rumors of wars. Nobody is going to create a rumor of a war with a country you have a healthy trade economy with. What they're going to do is all of a sudden, if you've shut that down, they say, well, I still am going to invest in this, but instead of investing in textiles and fabrics and bananas, I'm investing in bombs and guns and body plating and landmines. So you, when you do this, you reward your defense contractor pals and you reward your, as you said, favored political cronies.
Right. And the other thing, guys, that I've noticed with this administration, not as much in the past, but I think currently it certainly ramped up during campaign season leading up to the election, and I think it's still in full force, is the use of rhetorical imagery to plant seeds of discord. So, right? So immigration is always phrased as an invasion. It's always positioned as an army of illegal aliens. It's an invasion at our southern border. Hey, where do we put these folks now? What about Guantanamo Bay, which was historically used for prisoners of war, for terrorist prisoners, right? Even if they're treated royally, there's a reason why you're picking Guantanamo Bay. There's a reason why you keep saying invasion. There's a reason why you keep saying army, occupying force, right? I've heard illegal aliens, illegal immigrants in this country being referred to as an occupying force. There's a reason for that, right? Because now you're going to see arguments come out that immigrants don't have rights. Illegal immigrants don't have rights. Illegal aliens don't have rights because they're an invading army. They're an occupying force. Governors can now take action to expel these people the way they would when the Hessians were occupying a territory, right? After in the 17, in the early 1800s, right? So, then when it comes to trade, right? Well, we have a trade war. We have to negotiate sternly. They have to come to the right. There's always this thing that there's a tension, that there's antagonism. Jake, Hody, I'll let you guys. Do you feel that this is working? Is it effective, the use of this rhetoric? And I give the Trump administration credit. They're all on the same page. Not one of them will deviate from this language, right? There's not one person that says, look, it's really not an army. It might be a lot of people, but it's not an army. I don't consider them an occupying force if there's a group of immigrants that are resettled in Ohio or whatever, right? It's always occupying force. It's always invading army. It's always an invasion. The same thing with the trade wars, right? It's like they have to, you know, make a good deal and blah, blah, blah. I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you think this is working in general on the populace?
Well, it's very effective. It's been effective throughout history to do this sort of thing. And taken to its ultimate conclusion, it's really effective, like in Rwanda, where people ultimately take this for 50 years to the point that it leads to a genocide. Doesn't happen overnight, but over years and years and years of rhetoric, it becomes extremely dangerous. And that's the problem. And we have that in the United States that I think most people, Republicans and Democrats, for the most part, agree. We're really pretty tolerant people for the most part.
Right.
But we live in a time where we view, or many of us view, the other side, the other political side, as the enemies.
As evil.
And I don't know how many times I've had people tell me, you know, I don't know anyone that voted for Obama, or I don't know anyone that voted for Trump. Well, get out of your echo chamber now in the South now, so people don't usually say that about Trump, but get out of your echo chamber a little bit. You know, when we are not able to talk and we're not able to communicate or understand somebody that might have a different political view, and when we start using, you know, a whole bunch of derogatory terms to define the other side, it can be very dangerous, and it becomes easy to commit violence against somebody because they're a conservative or MAGA, or because they're on the left, they're a communist, right, socialist, whatever else, or they're an immigrant. And it becomes very easy to do things that we otherwise wouldn't do.
Yeah. Hody, you don't think that MAGA people or liberals are evil people, do you? Have you fallen prey to this rhetoric?
No, but, you know, extremely good people can be convinced to do really bad things. I'm going to recommend, actually, I'm going to give the right wing a couple props here. One of the books that you'll see going around in Jordan Peterson circles is a book called Ordinary Men, about what happened to Poland during the Nazification of Poland. And you would think it's just one of those things where it's like, I would never do that kind of thing. Those who are familiar with psychology and something called the Lucifer effect are aware that the more you think you're immune to this, the weaker you actually are to it. The more you think, oh, I can't be seduced to do a bad thing, the more likely it is that you will end up supporting that bad thing. Something I'll give to the right wingers as well is, while I can't stand their discourse, I find it to be reprehensible about immigrants. The Democrats have been awful about immigration. Every administration worse than the last. The way Joe Biden treated immigrants in camps, while the immigrants were being sexually assaulted in these concentration right. camps, and just moving around, you know, moving around pieces, moving around cops so that they'd molest different people at different camps, right? Like, abhorrent. And the conditions there got worse and worse. The only difference is the media fell asleep when Joe Biden did it versus Donald Trump. I am pro-immigrant all the time, and it's one of the things that I hate most about the Democrats, because while the Republicans in J.D. Vance's case, admit that he lied about the Springfield immigrants, the Haitian immigrants in Springfield, and got like the hate crimes thrown against them, he's honest about his hatred, right? Like, they're honest about their contempt. They openly at the RNC made fun of interracial families and made fun of step families. Like, they are not hidden about it. But it's
So Vance made fun of interracial families, even though
but he has one, and somebody at the RNC right. made fun of them. Yeah, he didn't specifically, okay. but didn't get the irony that he has an interracial family, right?
Right. Like, I just wanted to make sure, because that sounded right. a little off for me there. But yeah, you're right. Right. Yeah. the irony in there can sometimes escape people. I agree. And listen.
If I could say one last thing.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
I know I've recommended three books in a row, The Lucifer Effect, Ordinary Men. If you're really curious about immigration and like the problem that we have in the United States with our rhetoric around it, I think it should be mandatory reading in our schools, but it's a book called The Guarded Gate. Very well researched, really not partisan. You'll see that politicians of all stripes take fault in this. But essentially, the people that led to our current immigration restrictions ended up also going to Germany and leading the Holocaust there. They are not innocent people who think they're doing what's best for our country. There really is an insidiousness against immigration and about it. And it's something that people should kind of educate themselves on. I would go over it, but it's just too much.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's always existed in this country, going back as far back. I think the day after we won our independence, there was already anti-immigration fervor directed at someone. Now that the target has changed over the centuries, right? At first it was no Irish, right? That those famous signs, no shoes, no shirt, no Irish allowed, right? Then it was Asians on the West Coast, especially. There was anti-Asian immigrant bias on the West Coast. Then, of course, the anti-Italian bias, the anti-European bias. Like, it's all this bias, and it's been just circular throughout our history. Every 25, 30 years, there's an anti-immigrant fervor. So, unfortunately, it seems to be part of the American DNA that at some point you're going to have this anti-immigration wave. Hopefully, we can ride it out. Okay, everyone, you're watching Free For All right here at Grumblings Media. If you have any questions or comments, please hit us up in the comment section of whatever platform you're seeing us on, YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook. We love you all and love all platforms as true libertarians. Right now, I want to also mention and get your guys' feedback. Let me see if I could pop something up on the screen here. So during the week, the Twitter account for the LP National, the Libertarian Party National, posted this tweet. And it said, say what you will about Kanye, but if he's allowed to speak as he has, we have free speech here. And it quote tweeted Ye's tweet that said, some of my best friends are Jewish and I don't trust any of them. Laughing emoji. Now, that tweet in and of itself, both the Ye tweet and the Libertarian Party tweet, I'll be honest, guys, did not necessarily hit me as being super offensive, especially compared to some of the stuff that we see coming out of LPNH. But what was interesting was our new chair's response on Facebook, where almost immediately he messaged out, "We just have a brand new opening on our social media team if anyone is interested." And that was Stephen Nikala, who we have a tentative commitment that he will be on this show next week, one of his first public appearances to discuss for the new chairman of the LNC to come talk to us about his positions and his vision for the party's direction. Guys, referring to those tweets, tell me what you thought of them. First, Jake, what did you think of the original LP National quote tweet and then Stephen's response to it?
Well, it's pretty stupid because obviously he has free speech. Nobody's talking about locking him up. Congress is not passing any law that's going to prohibit him from saying any stupid thing he wants. And you don't have to take the stupidest argument out there that somebody makes, the stupidest thing somebody says, and post it up there and say, yes, we've got free speech. We know we have free speech. He's not going to get locked up for making that claim like happens in other countries.
Right.
So that was just ridiculous. I thought Stephen Nikala did a great job with his response. I thought that was hilarious, and I thought it completely turned perception around.
Yeah.
I thought he did a very good job with that.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Hody, the original tweet itself, again, and I'm comparing it to a low bar perhaps by saying previous tweets coming out of both the National account to a lesser extent and to a greater extent some LP affiliates, which are really offensive tweets and really troll tweets at best and just idiotic, childish tweets at worst. What did you think of that? Did you think that tweet warranted Stephen's response?
Absolutely. We too often are willing to look at, oh, look, we gained five, rather unsavory people, but we lost 100 good people, and look at the five that we gained. And we're like, look, these people have a voice now. That's not good, guys. Like it's really bad messaging. It scares away people that would be decent. Look, Stephen and I don't see eye to eye on everything. As is usual, I could say that about most people. But this is one that we can relate on common sense, right? We understand that this is the kind of thing and behavior that drove people away. He doesn't want to drive people away anymore, right?
Right.
LPNH actually very publicly drove away a big donor with their anti-Semitic joke, right? Their 6 million joke. Right as a donor was about to appear, like active sabotage. I'm going to quote Dave Smith a little bit when he talked to LPNH, and this was also public, and was like, hey, listen, if it's just about getting a following, deny the Holocaust. You'll get so many followers, so many more than you have, right? Like the media, here's a challenge for you right now. If you know any Republican or Libertarian who sold out to the duopoly, look at their viewership. It explodes, right? Joshua Eagle exploded, right? Jeremy Kaufman exploded. These people, as soon as you bend the knee to any of the main camps, you're going to explode. They control the social media. They want to see you making that pipeline, right? There's a reason that pipeline exists. It's not an accident. Now, listen, the Yeezy thing is really dumb timing. I learned from Glenn Beck. Here's a third right winger I'm going to give some credit to.
Okay.
Back when the ranch situation was going down and we found out that the owner like used the N-word casually, he was like, listen, guys, I know we want to take a stand for property rights, but this isn't it, right? This person is not somebody we can all get behind and celebrate and hold up as a hero. Right. Like, what's happening with his property is still bad. We can defend that, but this isn't going to be our big fight. Martin Luther King Jr. waited for Rosa Parks, right? Like there were several people beforehand who got kicked off of buses, but they weren't sympathetic enough, right? Martin Luther King Jr. was waiting for the most sympathetic person he could find. The person to make your point about free speech about is Edward Snowden. It's not Yeezy, right? Like it is, when we look at what Kanye West did, and I'll finish with this, He did a Super Bowl ad for 30 seconds for Yeezy.com. It's his clothing store. As soon as it went up, he limited the items that you could buy to only one item. And that item was a shirt with a swastika on it.
Right.
His website quickly went down after that. I believe it's still offline last I checked. But like, this is bad timing to side with Yeezy. Right. Like it is just right. At the moment, let Kanye tank. There's a better case to be made for free speech using other examples.
Right. The cases where you could take a despicable person a la, who is the Hustler publisher? The movie was made. Larry Flynt. The cases of Larry Flynt, who are despicable people but work for free speech cases, are few and far between. More often than not, you lose more people than you gain into the free speech camp by holding up these horrible human beings as pillars of free speech. So I agree with you that Stephen probably did the right thing. There was a little bit of humor in his response. I don't know how serious he was about whether there was an opening or not, but I think it makes the right kind of statement. As much as Angela McArdle and the Mises Caucus in 2022 made a statement by saying, we want to take out the plank against racism that we had in there, that we find racism deplorable. We want to take that out of the libertarian plank. That made a statement on their behalf, not one that I agree with. I think Nikhail is saying, like, hey, there's an opening after that dumb tweet. Also makes a statement, even if the tweet itself may or may not have been super, super trolly and offensive. But I think it's the right message. And we have a comment. Jocelyn says, I'm glad our chairman spoke up. That seems to be the consensus of the folks on the show. Jocelyn, thank you for watching. And on that note, let's transition a little bit. Jake, I want to give you some time. In the seemingly never-ending saga of let's find out what the former chair may have done and how things are being viewed, talk to us about now the curious issue of RFK Jr.'s lifetime libertarian membership. Now, this was touted, and the reason it's sort of important is for politicking, right? Because the claim, especially after today's confirmation hearing where RFK was confirmed as the head of HHS, you know, there are still strains of the Heiss-McArdle crew, for lack of a better word, faction, that are running around saying, see, we were the only ones who made the LP relevant. There is a libertarian member in the cabinet. They are also, as I recall, in the last day or two, trying to get Tulsi Gabbard a lifetime membership in the Libertarian Party so they can claim that McArdle has, in fact, put two libertarians into the Trump cabinet. And let me see if I can put that up real quick. This is part of a thread on Twitter. McArdle has me blocked, has my company blocked. So a screenshot we'll have to do. Basically saying, someone was saying, how much is a lifetime membership so that we could gift it to Tulsi? And you can see McArdle's, you know, giving out the cost, $25 for a regular membership, $1,500 for a lifetime membership. The person said, I could donate $300 of it. Do you accept silver as payment? You know, famously, a lot of libertarians like to pay with precious metals, you know, gold, silver, or Bitcoin, right? McArdle's response is, the staff is asking how you would transfer the silver. And, you know, then there was some more back and forth. This has a lot of people on libertarian Twitter saying, hey, guys, what staff is she talking about? Certainly, the former chair who resigned under allegations of embezzlement and other misconduct isn't communicating with the LNC staff on how to recruit, how to get a lifetime membership to Tulsi Gabbard so she can further claim that she was the most relevant LNC chairperson of all time. Jake, why don't you take it since you're the one who...
I don't know if she's talking with staff because she has a history of, I don't know how to say, embellishing the truth quite a bit.
Okay. All right.
So I don't think she's probably talking to staff. I think that response came in like 5 minutes after that reply was made. So, yeah.
Okay.
But as far as the RFK, we'll start with that one. Liberty Centuries and I think some other people have leaked this one out, had found out that there was a contribution made after the election, a couple weeks after the election, with Robert Kennedy's name on it to the Libertarian Party for the $1,500 for lifetime membership. The problem is that somebody else made that contribution and put his name on it. Now, you can't gift a membership. I could gift a membership to you, a lifetime membership. I have to use my own name and then tell the party that I've gifted you that membership, and you'd be a lifetime member. You just have to sign the pledge. Supposedly, Kennedy signed this the pledge that we will not initiate force back when he paid, or someone else paid him the $25 for him to become a member to be nominated at convention for president.
Right.
But this was the big thing that she'd been claiming, that, oh, we're getting this libertarian in the cabinet, this libertarian in the cabinet. We didn't get the libertarian in the cabinet. One, he's not a libertarian, even if he's paid the money. I mean, these are the same people that told us for how long that Bill Weld was not a libertarian. Bob Barr is not a libertarian. And now they're the first ones to say, oh, look at this libertarian we've got. He doesn't stand with us on any of the issues. He wants to ban all kinds of food. He wants to,
Ironically, they were against the Republican linos. Is that a proper phrase? They were against Weld and Barr, who are Republicans, who they now align with. And ironically, they're taking in two Democrats under their wing and labeling them libertarians, Gabbard and RFK. I just realized that's a delicious twist of irony for the MAGA-leaning libertarians like McCardle and Heiss.
Much about it, both of them. I mean, Kennedy, there's a report that came out that he's got $1.2 million in credit card debt. Couldn't he just add this $1,500 to the credit card? And Tulsi Gabbard just got a new job, so I think she can afford to pay the $1,500 if she really cares that much about it.
Right.
These are people that didn't have any interest in the membership of the party. They're not libertarians, and that's fine. But to claim that we've had some great influence of putting them into these positions is ludicrous. And it's also crazy because Kennedy made a deal with Trump, it appears, for himself. That did not involve the Libertarian Party. The Libertarian Party was not a party to that negotiation of him dropping out, and then Trump appointed him. That had nothing to do with the Libertarian Party. So her trying to act like she's a kingmaker over that is absolutely crazy, and it's laughable. It is laughable.
And what was this issue now? I think there might be some potential issues with the gifting of this lifetime membership to RFK, correct? That it may, if I read your Substack correctly, it may be a violation of FEC rules. Am I correct in that? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, Liberty Centuries is reporting that. So they listed that as being Robert Kennedy is making the contribution. The way I understand the FEC rules is you cannot do that. That's not allowed. Now, granted, this is, could be considered a clerical error, whatever. It needs to be fixed. The question is, did the party know about this? Did they know that somebody else made it? Why did they allow it to go through like this? Are they trying to hide something? There are those questions that I think are legitimate questions to ask. But at the same time, I think it's more comical than anything else that they're trying to claim that RFK is a libertarian. He doesn't even want to pay the donations and himself. So, and his issues, that it is ridiculous too, that we're going to sit here and talk about a guy that has been a left-wing Democrat all of his life.
Right.
And also, a former heroin addict is going to tell me what I can put into my body and is going to dictate to me that I can't have Red 40 or whatever else, and that we're going to call this libertarianism. The people that came in here for the Mises Caucus claimed to be the radical libertarians, and look how quickly they sold out when a little bit of money and power came. It is funny. And if we could go back in a time machine 5 years from now, or 5 years ago, I'd like to take him back there and say, look at what the Mises Caucus will support. And they wouldn't believe it. And I'd say, and you're going to support him, and you're going to call RFK a real libertarian.
And to be fair, I think there's a lot of former MC people. And I mean, some of the bigger ones like Karen Ann, like Todd Hagopian and guys like that. I keep forgetting the gentleman's name. I think he was the state chair in Georgia. I forget his name, who resigned from the Mises Caucus under protest recently. that they all said, this is not what we signed up for in Reno. This is not aligned with our beliefs, you know, and how did we get to this point? And to their credit, they openly say, we were duped. We were duped.
I think a lot of people were. And, yeah. You know, I've had people leak to me, several people, that supposedly this joint fundraising committee that the Libertarian Party created with RFK was designed to continuously go on. They were just going to create another campaign, a future campaign for them, and they were going to continue to funnel money in there. Now, you got to ask the question, why would people be donating to this campaign when he's it makes no sense. But ultimately, you know, you put Michael Heiss in there, and they continue to make orchestrate this agreement. We become the Kennedy Party, the anti-vaccine Kennedy Party, nothing to do with libertarianism. That's ultimately what it would have became, I believe, had they been able to continue this.
Yeah, I happen to agree with you. Quick comment. Angela says, staff, quotes, probably refers to Freedom Calls. And Freedom Calls, of course, Hody, was the company that Mr. McArdle, Austin Padgett, we found out through Jake's investigative work and Liberty Sentries that was really an undisclosed recipient of a lot of this money. So thank you, Angela, for the comment. And then Jocelyn again has a comment. Trump was also a longtime Democrat. LOL. Yeah, I never really put it together in my head how they claimed a lot of Republicans that, you know, in 2022, like you said, Bill Weld, Bob Barr was the impetus for saying, like, we can't deal with SARWARC's LNC anymore. You know, we need, because they're putting up these rhinos to be, and now you've got a Republican, you had a Republican aligned LNC between McArdle and Heiss that I can't wait to turn Democrats into libertarians, whether it's Trump, Gabbard, or RFK.
Part of the reason I think of that is they didn't like that type of Republican, though. They didn't like the old country club Republican that wasn't really offensive, libertarian leaning. They didn't like that type of Republican. They like this anti-establishment Republican, this one that will, you know, sound more radical and on a few issues maybe sound more libertarian, but ultimately do really authoritarian things.
Yeah. Hody, I didn't mean to keep you silent down there, brother. What do you have to say about this?
No, I mean, Jake's appropriate to ask because he's the one who's doing the digging and the Liberty Sentries are the one doing all the work. And I'm just reading what they write. This person, obviously with Angela, she's not trustworthy anymore. Big John, when you and I first kind of started doing free for alls together, we kind of played a game of stupid or evil. Right. Like, is this dumb or is this evil?
Right.
And she's kind of burnt the bridge to dumb at this point, you know, and that's hard for me to say because I like thinking of Angela McArdle as not intelligent. But, you know, she is, I mean, successfully stolen money and capsized the third biggest political party in America and sold it out for the Republicans. It requires some intelligence to do that. And got wealthy in the process. And so I think, unfortunately, when there's a mistake like this, if it's stupid, hey, listen, I understand being like, oh, I thought that was how a membership was donated. My bad. Let's fix it. This has already been amended 3 times from what I understand, and it's still wrong, and they're amending it again. You burnt the bridge to stupid already. I don't believe stupid anymore. Like, the only avenue I have open that's reasonable is evil. Now, maybe in a court, you can say, hey, listen, I'm just dumb. We see that happen a lot, and that's maybe something to hold up in court. But I'm not going to trust a dummy to babysit my kid. You know, ultimately, I know where your heart is. Whether you're dumb or evil, you always seem to fall off on the right side of the horse, so to speak. When you're falling off the horse, it's always to the right. So at some point I need to be like, hey, this isn't working out for me anymore. I'm pulling the plug on you and the rest of it. This guy who made the donation has already been in trouble with the FEC before, has already committed violations and had to pay those fines. Look, the importance of this is a principle, right? I want a principled, like, I am fine with single issue. I tell you what. If RFK was a big fat authoritarian on everything except for health services, I would be super excited to have him in office. If he was a libertarian on health services, unfortunately, he's libertarian on a couple things, and none of them are health and human services, right? Which is the job that he has. This is a really, unfortunately, the Libertarian Party recently in a tweet, and I don't know if Michaela will do something about this as well, but congratulated RFK and was like, yeah, this is really sticking it to the establishment. Yeah, more. Why do you think they're all affirming him? Why do you think the regime is cool with him on board, guys? Come on. You don't think the Democrats are licking their chops now that they can ban commercials from private businesses from air owing? You don't think they'll use that? Like, come on now. Like, this is something the Democrats have done forever. You are loading the gun, and as soon as they get in office, it's going to be their turn to use it.
Yeah, I've said this so often in my life that it's become hack for the people that know me. Anything that you're cheering for, any coercive power you're cheering for today, picture it in the hands of your worst enemy, whether it's political enemy, physical enemy, whatever. Go through that thought experiment. So to your point, you're happy that RFK may ban Pfizer from doing Super Bowl ads. On principle, I think that's stupid. I think it's stupid in general. Like, I don't view pharmaceuticals inherently as evil. You know, life expectancies bear that out. But okay, great. In 4 years, maybe they'll start banning, I don't know, what do Republicans love these days on TV?
Guns.
I don't know. Guns. Yeah. Maybe they're banning gun commercials. Maybe they're banning gun advertisements. Maybe they're banning sports betting. Whatever, you know, so just picture your worst enemy. And if you can honestly say to yourself, I am okay with both Donald Trump and Joe Biden having this power. Okay, then I know you're being sincere. Yeah. But if your justification is, I'm okay with it because I believe in what they're banning should be banned. Yeah, that's wrong. You're not a proponent of free speech. You're not a proponent of free will. And you're just joining in with a new regime, right? To your point, Hody, how much of, if you're in charge of everything, how much of a rebel are you at this point? If you're a MAGA person, you've got all branches of government. You've got yourself a president. You've got yourself a billionaire. You've got the equivalent of Soros now with Musk, right? So everything you complained about Soros, great thought experiment. You hated Soros. If you're a Republican, a conservative, even a libertarian to some extent, you hated Soros. This billionaire hates America. He's trying to let criminals out on the street, blah, 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 blah. Okay, fair enough. Maybe I agree with you. Why are you cheering Trump, Musk on right now? Oh, well, he's doing the right thing. You know, he's using his billions to cut down government. He's using his billions to keep out illegal immigrants. Okay, same thing. Same thing, right? So, I don't know, guys. That's where I'm at with this.
I can't wait until the Democrat gets in there, and you know, as somebody else pointed out, they renamed the Mississippi River the Barack Obama River, the state of Arkansas can be the state
great
of Clinton,
point.
You know,
yeah,
you know, the Republicans will be really upset when that happens.
Yeah, or you know, I never considered that, but you're absolutely right. I forgot about the whole Gulf of America nonsense and. How infuriating that must be to the rest of the world. And I know there's a lot of people who are like, well, who cares what the rest of the world thinks? America first, baby. We look out for number one. Well, you know, it's kind of hard. You've made your task exponentially more difficult, you know, because now you've got everybody like, it's just simple calculus at this point, I would think. Okay. Oops. One more comment. Angela. Heroin should be sold in the free market, but commercially developed pharmaceuticals should be banned is a weird flex for sure. So, yeah, absolutely. Look, can we agree that pharmaceuticals have an undue influence on government policy? Absolutely. But as Milton Friedman used to say, like, you don't blame the person who's taking advantage of something the government is offering. You blame the government for having that much influence in your life where a private company could go to them to build the protective moat or to get coercive laws passed in their favor, right? So the real problem isn't Pfizer or Moderna or AbbVie or anybody else. It's that the government is willing to say, if you pay us enough, we'll make sure things fall your way. So to me, it's a little bit of a, and you know, it goes along with what Angela just commented. You know, like, how could a libertarian be okay with free markets for any drug, but pharmaceuticals should be banned from peddling their wares?
You know, that's one of the reasons why I became a libertarian. My grandmother had breast cancer in the 90s, ended up ultimately dying from it. And I remember that there was medications that she could not get that was readily available in Japan and Europe, but the FDA hadn't approved it.
Right.
Now, would she have died anyway? Well, very likely, but we don't know that. We were so far behind because we weren't allowing these drugs. Now, you know, Robert Kennedy wants there to be delays on drugs. We don't need delays on this. People need to be able to make their own decisions. You shouldn't be in no vaccine. You should be able to make your decision on vaccines, masks, whatever it may be, and what medicines you're going to put into your body. We don't need some busybody nanny state bureaucrat like Robert Kennedy telling us what to do.
And you know what, Jake, on that note, that might be the perfect note on which to wrap up the show. I think that's a great note. Libertarians have took it in a weird direction when it was like, we're not anti-mandate, we're anti-vaccine. And I think that's where we took a wrong turn during the Trump administration. All right. I'll let each one of you give yourselves a plug or two, starting with our guest, Jake Porter, former gubernatorial nominee in Iowa. I love saying that. Jake, tell the people where they can find your good work on the internet.
You can find me on Twitter or X, Jake D. Porter, and on Substack at jakeporter.org. Once again, jakeporter.org.
And Jake, thank you so much for joining us again tonight. It's always a pleasure to have you on Free for All. My co-host here, Hody, promote yourself.
Isn't it funny that Jake's pro-immigrant when he's got D. Porter as part of his name, right?
Like, you know, I made that joke the first time I had Jake. You're second with that joke there, Hody.
Am I really? Oh, no.
But I appreciate that great minds think alike.
It is a great mind that you have. All right. I am Hody Johns. You can find me at Hody Johns on all the usual social media sites. My big thing right now is I'm making a difference culturally with the Love First Christians. Do a lot of outreach, do a lot of work, do a lot of focus on the least of us. Currently, just a great group to have any kind of debate. This last week, we kind of were talking about the Virgin Mary and if she had like original sin or not. A lot of non-Christians, a lot of prospective Christians, a lot of people have been pastors or priests for like 20 plus years in the group. Just a really great place if you're looking to have conversations and questions that you feel you might be judged or feel uncomfortable if you'll ask them to like the wrong person. We're the right people. And we just love talking with you. So if you'd like an invite to the Love First Christians, again, find me. My name's Hody Johns. It's a free Discord group. You can get a lot of good stuff done with your life.
Absolutely, folks. Check Hody out, especially if you're inclined and have questions that you want to ask. And I'll do him a favor on X. It's The Hode Man when you go to X. The Hode Man if you want to follow him on X. Me, I'm Big John. Join us here again next Thursday for Free for All. Hopefully, we'll have Stephen Nikala, the new LNC chairman, on to talk to us about his vision for the party going forward. Until then, find us here at Grumblings Media, at Grumblings Media on all the platforms. Grumblingsmedia.com is our website where we consolidate all our content. And after all that pimping, I'm exhausted. So all I'll say is catch you next week, everyone. Peace out.